Hi, everyone. Welcome to the West Wellness and Longevity Podcast. My name is Tara West, and I am a functional nutritionist, passionate about how we can use food as medicine and truly heal our bodies. I'm also obsessed with longevity with a love for peptides, fitness, and all the latest and greatest biohacking resources. I spend hours upon hours looking at the latest research and implementing them into my own life and in my practice with my clients. I look forward to sharing all of this wonderful information with you. Hey guys, quick reminder, this podcast is for information purposes only and not meant to treat or diagnose. So please consult with your personal health practitioner prior to implementing anything that you hear about on this show. Now on to the next episode. Okay, welcome back everyone. Today we are going to touch on a topic that I'm sure a lot of you can relate to, because as you get into the peptide world, most of us get really excited when you start hearing about like all the amazing things that these peptides can do. And so you want to try all of them and you want to get these amazing responses that you hear other people have. And the truth is some of it's overhyped, right? Peptides can do amazing things, but they do have their limitations. And so I think a lot of disappointment comes in with expecting too much out of certain peptides. And I think it's frustrating too when you hear or read about someone having one response and then you take a peptide and your response is totally different. And that can be frustrating and disheartening, especially if you've invested time and energy and money in particular into a specific peptide and you're just not getting the outcome you want. So why is that? Well, there's a lot of different reasons for that, and I'm not going to go into all of them today. But I think one of the ones that gets overlooked and that's not discussed very often is how genetics play a role in how you are going to respond to peptides. And you've heard me say this before. This stuff is very bio-individual, meaning that it's going to perform according to your individual biology. And I think when we live in the world of big pharma, which most of us have been raised in, and that's what we know, that's what's familiar, you think, I'm going to take this one thing and it's at this dose and it's going to give me that outcome. And peptides simply just don't work the same way. And that's a good thing. That's why we love them. But that also means that they do have some limitations, particularly when it comes to things like genetics. So we're going to dive in and I'm going to give some examples of how genetics can impact some peptides. Okay. And this kind of can help explain again why you may take one and have a wildly different experience, whether that be positive or negative, than somebody else. That's happened within my own household of, you know, I'll take a certain peptide and then my husband will take a certain peptide and we'll have two totally different responses to it. But anyway, let's just kind of dive into this. So peptides are essentially messenger molecules, okay? They send instructions to cells. So think of it like sending a text message. The peptide is the message. But for that message to matter, three things have to happen. The peptide reaches the target tissue, it needs to bind to the correct receptor, and the receptor activates a signaling pathway inside the cell. If any of those steps are disrupted, the signal weakens or disappears, and genetics can influence every single one of those. So scientists generally break this down into three main mechanisms. The receptor structure is different, so if a receptor protein is altered due to genetics, the peptide may bind less efficiently, and that means the signal becomes weaker. The receptor works, but the signal's poor, so sometimes the peptide binds normally, but the internal signaling cascade is reduced. So the message is received, but the cell barely responds to it. And then downstream biology processes that signal differently. So even if the receptor works perfectly, genetics may change how the body processes the signal afterwards. This can change things like metabolism, appetite signaling, or hormone release. So let's talk about one of the big ones, okay? Let's get some real-world examples of how this may be influencing your personal peptide journey right now. GLP, because we have a lot more research on the GLP. So some of the stuff they're finding out for people that are non-responders is quite interesting. We're talking about things like tirzepatide, semaglutide, and retatrutide. So GLP-1 works by binding to the GLP-1 receptor, which regulates appetite, insulin secretion, and gastric emptying. But some studies have shown that variants, in particular with the GLP-1R gene, can significantly change how well these peptides work. And research published recently in Diabetes Care found that individuals carrying certain GLP-1 receptor variants experience reduced weight loss and weaker glucose lowering when treated with GLP-1 receptor agonist. Another fascinating discovery involves a gene called PAM, which helps activate several peptide hormones. A 2023 study found that people carrying certain PAM variants showed reduced sensitivity to the GLP-1 signaling and a weaker response to GLP-1 therapy. So two people can take the exact same peptide, but their receptors may respond completely different. And I have seen this within my own practice and just talking to people. I'll do a consultation with someone and they get started on a GLP and they come back to me and they've lost, 10 pounds in a month. Crazy, right? And I'm not talking about someone that needs to lose a lot of weight. They just are trying to optimize their health. And then I have people that come back and they haven't lost a single pound. And so you can kind of see that there's so many different variations involved in that, not just genetics, but genetics do play a role and it's something that needs to be considered. Okay, so growth hormone peptides and receptor genetics. So let's talk about that. Growth hormone release in the body is controlled by multiple peptide signals, including GHRH, ghrelin, and somatostatin. I don't know if I said that right. Many research peptides attempt to stimulate these pathways. So for example, the GHRH-based peptides are somerelin, CJC1295, and tesamorelin. And then we have the ghrelin receptor peptides, ipamorelin, GHRP2, GHRP6. But genetics can influence how these pathways respond. And so mutations in the GHRH receptor gene can impair the body's ability to respond to GHRH signaling. So in individuals with these mutations, peptides that rely on the GHRH receptor pathway may produce very little growth hormone release. However, peptides that stimulate the ghrelin receptor may still work because they activate a completely different receptor. So this is a great example of why some GH peptides work for some people, while others do not. So it may not be the peptide itself, it may be the pathway that's being targeted. That's why I always like people to start the growth hormone peptides individually and try them individually before they start stacking them together so you can know which one works best for you. I will tell you my personal experience with this. The first one I ever did was ipamorelin, which I respond very well to ipamorelin. That's the ghrelin one. I do not respond well to CJC1295 or tesamorelin. So that shows me that I probably have some sort of this genetic thing going on. But I wouldn't know that if I hadn't tried them individually. And you certainly don't want to be using a peptide that you're just simply not going to respond to. So a little tip here, if you are on a growth hormone peptide, and it's not working, switch to one of these other ones that signal a different pathway and see if that might help. And also, start them individually. Do a round of them individually before you start stacking them together, because those are really common to be stacked together. Okay, so let's talk about the melanocortin peptides. And this is things like melanotan 1 and 2. These work on receptors like MC1R, MCR3, MC1R, MC3R, and MC4R. The MC1R receptor specifically regulates skin pigmentation. So variants in the MC1R gene are well known to influence how people tan. People with certain MC1R variants commonly found in individuals with red hair and fair skin have reduced receptor signaling. So this means the melanocortin peptides may produce weaker tanning effects in these individuals. So this also helps explain why some people using melanotan peptides tan extremely quickly, while others barely respond at all. And this is another example I can tell you, like in real life, I am very pale, but I have a little bit more melanin than my daughter does. She's very pale, very fair skinned. And so I actually respond pretty well to melanotan. She does not. And I have found people that have very, very fair skin, sometimes it actually produces a little bit of an odd color in them because their body just doesn't produce that naturally. and it doesn't, and so it doesn't respond the way that someone that has a little bit more melanin naturally in their skin normally would. So this is another example that comes up quite a bit when I'm working with people. Okay. Another example is the kisspeptin peptides and fertility signaling. So kisspeptin is another peptide that's gaining a lot of interest in research space, particularly in fertility research. And it activates the KISS1, the KISS1 receptor, which stimulates the release of GnRH and ultimately triggers LH, luteinizing hormone, and FSH production, follicle stimulating hormone. And mutations in this KISS1R gene have been identified as a cause hypogonadotropic and hypogonadism. Sorry, those are mouthfuls. And this is a condition where the reproductive hormone cascade does not activate properly. So if the receptor itself is impaired, the kisspeptin signal may not trigger the normal hormone response. So it's another example of how genetics can change how peptide signaling works in the body. So someone may get a really good response off of kisspeptin and it worked great for them. And then you have somebody else where it's like, I don't know, it's just not working, which can be highly frustrating because you want to know, why is it working for them and not for me? Again, kind of have to take a step back. There's a lot of variables that could be involved, but genetics could definitely be one of them. Okay, so let's dive into the neuropeptides and brain response. So some peptides work primarily in the brain. So we're talking about, you know, oxytocin, Sulanthin, Somax, which are modulatory peptides. And studies on intranasal oxytocin have shown that genetic variants in the oxytocin receptor gene, that's the OXTR gene, influence how individuals respond to oxytocin administration. Some people show strong emotional and behavioral responses, while others show minimal changes. And although research is still emerging, this suggests that neuropeptide signaling in the brain may also be genetically influenced. This is the neuromodulator peptides, or the nootropic peptides, are ones that I see a lot of variation with people on whether they respond to it well or not. So there's a lot of things, the brain chemistry and stuff like that's going on, but a lot of that is genetically influenced. So this is one where I see people either love it, they hated it, or they got nothing at all out of it. One of the things that comes up, you know, as we're going through these examples, and I have people ask me, well, what about dosing? Can you just increase the dose? And let's talk about that. So sometimes a genetic variant simply makes the receptor less sensitive, not non-functional. So in that case, a higher concentration of the peptide can sometimes compensate. So think of it like needing to knock louder on the door. A good example of this are the GLP-1 receptors. So the variants in that GLP-1R gene have been shown to reduce response to GLP-1 receptor agonists, meaning people may experience smaller reductions in glucose and weight. However, these individuals may still respond. They just sometimes require higher dosing exposure and longer treatment duration. So in this scenario, low dose equals minimal effect, moderate dose, partial effect, and then a high exposure would be an improved response. So the receptor still works, it just needs more stimulation, okay? When dosing does not solve the problem, well, this is when there's a broken receptor or pathway. And so in some cases, the receptor or signaling pathway is structurally impaired. So if the receptor cannot signal properly, adding more peptide does not fix this, it's disconnected. So for example, if you have mutations in those growth hormone receptor genes that we were talking about, it can impair the ability of the GHRH-based peptide to trigger growth hormone release. So increasing doses of pepsimorelin, CJC-1295, and tesamorelin may not produce a response, okay? However, the peptides like ipamorelin in the same class of peptides that act on a different receptor like we talked about before could possibly still work, but that's not about dosing. And you also have to consider when genetics affect the downstream biology. Sometimes the peptide and receptor work normally, but the genetics alter what happens after the signal is sent. So again, we're going to go back to that example of the GP1 biology variants and the PAM gene. It alters the peptide hormone processing. So people with these variants have reduced GLP-1 sensitivity even when the GLP-1 drugs are administered. So in that situation, increasing the dose may only have limited impact because the downstream physiology processes the signal differently. And in that scenario, you know, someone might really do well on cagrilintide as opposed to a GLP because it's signaling a different pathway and the physiology on the downstream is different. So if you or someone or you know of someone that the GLPs are just not working, or you're having to be on extremely high doses for them to work, you may consider trying
cagrilintide
because you may have some of these genetic variants that are preventing that GLP-1 from working for you. And so when I see people get up to the really high dose, that's when I start saying, something maybe else may be going on here. So there's just some food for thought there. So for those of you who are experimenting with research peptide protocols today, here's a few important takeaways. If a peptide doesn't work for you, it doesn't necessarily mean the compound itself is ineffective. Your biology may simply respond differently. Second, different peptides often target different receptors and pathways. So if one approach doesn't work, just like we mentioned with the GLP, another strategy may still be effective. And third, we are still very early in understanding the interaction between genetics and peptide signaling. So many of these relationships are only beginning to be studied. So I feel like there's going to be a lot more coming out on this. And so stay tuned, because I'm fascinated with genetics. I love to see how all this interacts with each other. So the next time you hear someone say, this peptide worked amazing for me, or someone else says it did absolutely nothing, the difference is probably not the dosing. Sometimes it is. Things like MOTC, the dosing can be very different. NAD, which is technically not a peptide, it's an enzyme, can be work very different in people. But it simply just might come down to genetics. And as science continues to evolve, understanding how our genes influence peptide signaling may completely change how we approach these compounds in the future. So when I went back to school several years ago, one of the classes I had to take was all about genetics. And that's when I started really getting fascinated by it. There's all kinds of genetic tests out there that you can take now to find out certain information, if that's something that you're able to do. And I think it's a great tool to have if you're in this health, wellness, optimization space and you're really wanting to understand your own unique biology, physiology, genetic makeup. These all work together. And don't just give up on a certain peptide. Consider changing the pathway. If GLPs aren't working for you, consider the amylin pathway one, the cagrilintide. If tesamorelin isn't working for you, consider icamorelin. And then there are going to be some that just don't work for you. Kisspeptin may not work. Melanotan one just may not be one that you can take. And that's okay, because there's lots of other amazing peptides out there that you can take to help you meet your goals. So just some food for thought. Thought this was a fun, interesting topic. I try to keep it pretty simple. There's a lot of heavy science that goes into this. So I didn't do a super deep dive on that. This was more just as a little nugget, if you will, of an educational resource of things to consider as you are in your own individual peptide journey. So at the end of the day, so that kind of wraps up today's episode, pretty short and sweet. And I know that's how most of you like it. As far as any updates on anything, let's see, I can't think of anything major to update everyone on. If you're a woman and you're getting into peptides, please go join my school group. The link is in the show notes. It's totally free. It's the Women's Peptide Collective. I post a lot of educational resources, and you just get to learn from all the other ladies that are in that group. What else? Oh, I mentioned this the last couple times. I'm getting a lot of emails, which I love, about this. I have an updated peptide guide for 2026. It's much more thorough and detailed than the one that I was previously handing out last year. So if you want that, it's free. Simply email me. My email's in the show notes. And I will send that over to you as soon as possible. If you send me an email and I miss it and I don't respond within 24 hours, email me back. Sometimes emails get lost or they get in my spam folder and I often forget to check that. So I'm not ignoring you. I just simply didn't see it. And let's see what else. I think that's it for now, guys. As always, thank you so much for listening. I love doing what I do. I appreciate each and every one of you. And until next time, have a blessed day.